Hello and welcome to the Four Wheel Dive Podcast. The Drive and Dive starts now. Hello and welcome. I'm Tim Masso here with the original YouTube King of Cars, Kyle Lindsay. Kyle, we've got a guest today. We are three. Who are we meeting?
Yeah, this is my buddy Andy Rodriguez. He's been helping me tremendously with body and paint for the YouTube projects and trying to help me get caught up, and we're about there.
That's right.
Andy, welcome. So for those of you joining in on the World Wide Web, today we're going to talk a little bit about Restomods. Kyle's got a fantastic auction result to tell us about. We're going to learn a little bit about the truck behind the numbers and then talk a bit more broadly about Restomods and, you know, what is the right way to sell a Restomod in 2024. So Kyle, take me back to the beginning. You've always been an S10 fan. Like, how did this S10 Restomod idea come together?
Long story short, I was in the middle of doing like a fixer-upper series on this 93 Jimmy that I had, you know, four-door S10 Blazer, basically. And I found this truck probably 5 minutes down the road in the back lot of an old mom-and-pop dealership, and it wasn't running. It was just a clean body S10, so, you know, naturally I bought it. It was cheap. So it honestly underwent a whole lot of direction changes because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Originally, it was going to be more of another just fixer series because I was still kind of learning my way through building vehicles and stuff. And just as I got more comfortable with things, I was like, oh, I could probably pretty easily V8 swap this. And then I did all of that. And then I was like, oh, let's do fuel injection on this V8. So it was a carb 355, small block originally. And then I went the LS route, and then that motor failed. So it went, got another LS, and it was a off and on build process for about 4 years.
Yeah. You know, the watchmaker, Roger W. Smith, in my industry, I work in the watch business. When he started making watches, he said, you know, I would spend months building a couple of parts, and by the time I was done making them, I would look back on how much I learned, and I felt like I had to go back and make it again with all that knowledge. Was there a little bit of that?
Oh, absolutely. I know I'm going to run into that with my 240SX, which Amy and I have been planning out for probably a good several months now, just ideas and stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes the vehicle that you're building kind of becomes your learning vehicle as well, which is good, but it can be bad because, you know, good things are obviously, you know, getting it running, taking it for its first drive, not going into a ditch, like that kind of deal. But the bad things is like, oh man, I really should have not cut that hole, or I should have routed that wire a different way or something. So, you know, with each iteration of the S10, it got better and better, and now it is just, I mean, I'm biased because it's my truck, but it is just the most badass S10. Mm-hmm. It is so fast and gnarly sounding, and it's a nice truck too. Like, it's legit a pleasure to drive. This person that bought it is going to love it.
So Kyle, Andy, tell me a little bit about how, like, the scope of the project increased. I mean, everyone who gets an old truck thinks about doing an engine swap, but this really became upholstery, sound system, brakes, disc conversion. You had all sorts of sponsored content from top end brands that were giving you parts to make this not so much an S10, but I saw it as kind of like the closest thing you can get in America to a Holden RSV Maloo R8, like an Australian ute with all the options.
Right. No, I appreciate that. yeah, it's, I mean, you would agree, Andy.
I would stand by that, Tim. I just have to say, wow. I mean, I thank you. That's a compliment.
Like, Andy came in kind of towards the tail end of the build, but he helped me with some of the more not so fun parts, like replacing the 5.3 that failed with the 6 liter. And it took us 6 hours.
We sure did. We came to find ourselves into some situations with the truck during the build. They're in the final processes of it. Almost it feels like it's wants to create itself into a whole ball of a mess. And you just gotta see yourself past that. You gotta adapt and overcome. It's almost like this military mindset that you have to keep as you're going through the process of building a vehicle. I would almost dare say building anything, you know, with many technicians, people that work with their hands, and not just their hands, but their minds as well, to get across and overcome these situations that vehicles will bring you. It's not that if, it's when and will.
Right.
So, but it was definitely a learning curve as always. It was a great time.
So Andy, you came in sort of towards the end of this. Kyle, from like the point you hauled that car out of like its grave, to the point that it went up on Cars and Bids, and we will talk about the auction, what was the total life cycle time of this project?
Like I said, it was off and on about 4 years, but if I was working on it constantly, I think it probably constantly and without the direction changes, it probably would have been about a year and a half to 2 year build, something like that. There was a lot of things to figure out, you know. Fortunately, S10s are really popular. They're starting to come back even more popular, especially with like the memory crowd that wants, you know, the vehicle from their, you know, youth and stuff. Which, you know, the resto mod is kind of a different take on the situation. But long story short, the nice thing about an S10, like C10s and whatnot, there's so much aftermarket support. There's so many different ways that you can build it. I mean, you know, V8 swapping is one of the easiest things to do, to be quite honest. You know, like with Holley in particular, they make a turnkey swap package, basically from the cooling system to the exhaust, mounts, you know, even other little yitzy little things. And that was one of the things that I, you know, tried to promote in that series is like, you know, you don't have to be a master mechanic to build a cool resto mod like this. You know, just search out, you know, find the companies that make the right products and, you know, you can do it. And that was a lot of fun. You know, some people may think, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, LS swaps are so boring. It's just an LS S10, yada, yada. That's no. Like,
No, and I know that's the case because you had a still visible, voluminous list of modifications on your Cars and Bids listing. Guys, you can actually go back and look at this listing and see everything that was done. But yeah, go on Cars and Bids, check VIN ending in 2245812, and you will find that there are literally dozens of drivetrain items alone. That's before you get into chassis, braking, electronics, interior, body kit. This was just a catalog of premium parts, well done. But it's also a pro street build. Like, there's two different ways you can take an old truck. You can go very, you know, truck oriented, hauling. Or towing, hauling, off-road, like build out those capabilities. You went slammed, you went handling, you did a rear disc conversion, Wilwood six-piston fronts. Really take me through how you made this a pro street truck.
It was kind of an evolution, just the build as a whole. But basically, you know, when I was right in the middle when I decided to ditch the 350, the 355 and do the 5.3 swap, I mean, it's common knowledge that if you want something to hook, if you want an S10 to hook with power, the 7.5, 10 bolt rear end is going to grenade. They're fragile. So between basically the motor, I wanted to make the whole package. I didn't want something that was just, you know, fast in a straight line. I didn't want something that, you know, just looked cool or was just for show. I wanted every single bit of that truck to be built to purpose. There was not one single bolt, not one single avenue of that truck that was not looked after, considered, modified, or literally the only thing that was not removed from that truck in the build process. I was talking to the auction winner yesterday. I was like, the only thing I did not take out was the dash. the dash structure, everything underneath the dash and the speedometer and all that kind of stuff came out, but just the dash padding structure was the only thing that did not come out. But I mean, even down to the rear end, I had a company in Ohio, I think it was called JD Race and Restoration. They built a custom GM 8.5-inch rear end, which is typically found in like a Blazer ZR2, which is four-wheel drive, and they're, you know, extra wide. So the axle tubes were cut down, custom Moser axles, locking differential, just blah, blah, blah. It's just everything was done to a T. Very proud of it.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is that it really is a very heavily modified vehicle, but there's always the question with a Restomod, how far do you take it? From a functionality standpoint, you took it very far, but it still looks like an S10 inside and out. Like you said, you kept the dash, and while it's stanced, it's got air dam, it's got some ground effects, it's got some fairings around. You know, you've got that Class 3 truck full lit, like fairing around the upper windshield, but it still looks like an S10. I'd say it's 90% still like an S10 outside. How did you kind of hold back there?
Really, and to be perfectly honest, it is really easy to go overboard. I've been overboard before, and you don't even realize it until you're way on past, and it's like, oh boy. But with the S10, I wanted it. The original goal for the build was to make a fast, fun street truck that still had that old school look. You know, to each his own, not everybody likes the cab visor, for example, but, you know, it was a new old stock Lund moon visor that was still in the package, had all the cool, you know, advertisements for the other accessories they had back then. And this one's lighted. And it was just part of the vision. It was like, oh, I want this thing lowered. I want it, you know, big wheels, but nothing too big. I liked the factory S10 fender flares that you can get on some of them. So, I mean, just all together, you know, it just, in my head, it just worked. It's like the tailgate. The tailgate was not correct for an 89, or it was, but not for a Tahoe model. A Tahoe model would have had like a decal placard type thing that just said, you know, Chevrolet going across the back. The base model S10s had the raised letter tailgates. And I was like, oh, of course the stamped tailgate's cooler looking. So I did that. I changed the 89 front end that had the original four-piece S10 grill to a 93 model, which was my favorite grill, the one-piece chrome. So, I mean, I did a bunch of subtle modifications that most people probably wouldn't know about until they dive in deep. Oh, and I wasn't even thinking about this, the tailgate itself. So, you know, Tim, you know how like the tailgates had those ribs and stuff in them? You know, when you fold it down, they got the standing ribs. So obviously that's very uncomfortable to sit on. So one of the things that we did, welded a piece of plate steel over it and smoothed it. So when you open up the tailgate and lower it down, it's one flat piece of metal that you can sit on if you want. And then it's been bedlined just like the rest of the bed. So there's been a lot of little subtle modifications, a lot of extra little care thrown in there with old school, new old stock accessories like the, you know, stainless bits here and there, like the window visors. I like the fog lights, so I made sure to source an original set of fog lights with the air dam because it looks sporty when the truck's lowered. I mean, even down to the cowl hood.
Even down to the door edge guard.
Yeah, the stainless door edge guards, new old stock GM. Like, I don't know. It's just part of the vision. I was like, I look at this truck now, and I'm like, dang, that thing's mean looking.
Yeah, it really is. And it's also usable. Like, that's the great thing. This is something you could drive every day. Like, there's stuff out there, like Raptors, that's a pain in the butt to get around in. It's great if you got wide open roads or you're off-road. But you look at the size of trucks today, and it's like, you know, that the mid-sized trucks of today look like the full-size trucks of the 1990s. My uncle was a carpenter. He had a F-150. It's smaller than a ZR2 today, like a Colorado ZR2, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
This is a great size truck, and I would love to see something like this because we've got a lot of sort of like Baja pre-runner trucks on the market now. I would like to see someone go back and do something like a GMC Cyclone and use your S10 as a model for it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the cool thing is, and Andy can attest to this too, like, you know, when you think of a truck that's been lowered to this degree, and you know, I wouldn't consider it slammed. Like, especially when you talk to the airbag crowd, they're like, too much wheel gap still, bro. But
any wheel gap is too much for them.
Yeah, but you know, I've got you know, a bunch of lowering components in the chassis, but I've got a really nice set of Alden American coilovers in the front and some adjustable shocks in the back. And even though it's as lowered as it is, I don't even know how much lower it is. Maybe like 3.5 in the front, maybe 4.5 in the back, roughly. But it does not ride bad at all. Like my wife and I have driven the truck down the highway about an hour each way, and it's about as smooth as glass as you would expect for that. About the only thing, and this is just because it's low, you know, if you're not careful and you hit a big bump, you know, sometimes, it can bottom out slightly, but it's just so slight. It's not even worth adjusting the coilovers because it looks so good.
And I got to agree with you here. Like, as a Corvette guy, I definitely know what it means to bottom out. And I got even less clearance than that S10. The S10 still got about 5 inches of clearance. It's not like we're hugging the ground. You can clear a curb. You can clear, you know, a speed bump in this truck. Yeah. It's going to be driven. But, you know, what's interesting to me is that it rode so well, but you didn't go with coil springs on the rear end. You were still using the leaf springs, but like modern gas-charged, like, shocks.
Yeah, I mean... There's all sorts of, again, with S10s and trucks in general, there's so many things you can do. You can do bag setups, four-link setups, parallel two-link. I mean, there's so many different options, and I really have no explanation as to why I just left leaf springs. I was just trying to keep it simple, more or less. It hasn't affected the way the truck drives or handles. It handles like it's on rails, but... again, just to compliment the coilover setup that I have in front, when I was talking with Alden American on the right setup and stuff, like they actually got me a custom set of shocks. You know, I, after measuring and, you know, checking clearance and travel and all that kind of stuff, we got a set of bespoke shocks that have the same type of ride rebound adjustment as the fronts do. So I was able to, you know, just through my testing and, you know, putting miles on it, making sure it was all good, you know, I ended up firming up the fronts a little bit more than the backs, just because the 6 liter is a heavy motor, and all in all, it's very, very stable, very level.
Now, in the end, did you have to make any calls on, like, how thick of a sway bar to use? You did have a street setup. There was some handling intent. How did you sort of guesstimate how thick of a sway bar to use with something that was probably not originally intended to go around corners?
Well, it was kind of a guess originally, to be honest. Some of the lowering components I got from Beltech. I don't know if you've heard of them before. But they make some really good stuff for all sorts of different trucks and other vehicles. But they offer sway bar kits for S10s. My truck had no sway bars. I know some S10s came with or were available with front sway bars. But even the factory sway bars were not as thick as these Beltech ones. So I, you know, drilled and tapped the mounts and everything to be able to install the front sway bar. And the back, obviously, was completely custom with Beltech's kit and stuff. But all in all, that made a huge difference. You wouldn't believe, I mean, I'm sure you would believe, but how much that thing wallowed just driving it across our property with no sway bars.
I mean, I've been in a couple of, like, off-road vehicles that have no sway bars or have electronic disconnecting sway bars. It is almost sort of like a 50s Cadillac sensation, that wallowing. But, you know, the great thing is, you know, you chose right. You actually went with a pretty beefy setup. Like, these sway bars look like they're like 1 inch straight through. Very substantial.
Yeah, they're awesome.
You know, once you start lowering the center of gravity, you go with modern shocks, you wind up with something that can go around a corner. But what I also noticed when I'm underneath the truck, you had almost 300 photos on the auction site. Guys, again, go out, see this auction listing. It's going to be around for a long time. The entire bottom of the truck was antiseptic. Now, a resto mod is a mod. It's been rotted and modded, but it's also a restoration. How did you get every part of a 30-year-old undercarriage so clean?
See, that's where Andy and I have been able to work very well together on this 62 GMC that we're both tag teaming right now. But the S10, I don't know. It's an obsession of not being able to leave well enough alone. It's like, oh my gosh, that bolt has a little bit of corrosion on it. That's nasty. It must be replaced. Or, you know, if I'm going to take the body off, I might as well undercoat it, bedline it. You know, if I'm going to do that, I might as well make the frame pretty. It's like, if you're going to do any kind of build or restoration, you know, it's way more than just, you know, oh, I'm going to do a disc brake conversion. Great. Mm-hmm. When you go in there, make everything around it look like, you know, it look like new. Like when people look at it, let them see that you've been in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like with an old drum brake, you can replace pads and you can replace liners. But while you're in there, you know, do the wheel cylinder, like make it as good as new. So next time you go in there, you know, it's not like a mismatch of new parts in an ugly housing or an aging hydraulic system. Right. It's basically like going the extra mile, basically. Once you've taken the car apart.
Yeah, and you can go above and beyond. Well, let me rephrase that. You can go too far and make it undrivable, but extremely pretty. I mean, you see that in the lowrider crowd with all the painted up bits and the chrome and stuff. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot with, you know, just classic car restorations in general. People want the underside, you know, painted to match the body and clear coated and polished. And I live
on the level.
Yeah, exactly. I have a gravel driveway. You know, I live more or less in the country. Like I can't drive something like that. So when I'm refurbishing, I'm keeping usability in mind. So I want everything underneath the truck to be able to go up and down gravel and not worry about it. So if something's going to get kicked up and hit the frame or hit the underside of the body, it's going to hit bedline or it's going to hit some kind of thick material and not chip it to where it's going to end up flash rusting and cause issues later.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, just look at your decision to do a really high-quality bed liner. Would it look awesome, bare-painted metal? Of course it would look awesome. You could do incredible things in there. But it's still got to be able to work as a truck. People are going to tailgate in it. They're going to haul some stuff. You know, the truck can haul more than ass. It's a really well-rounded rebuild.
Yeah, exactly. It really is.
Now, I will say this, though. What impressed me most with this is that when you go under it, when you go in the engine bay, it is spotless. Now, it's done with a view to using it, but it gives you that impression of like when you go on Bring a Trailer or Cars and Bids, and like the original selling dealer is letting go some early 90s Land Cruiser that has 40 delivery miles on it. The way the undercarriage of that undriven thing looks, still, you know, serious business, but antiseptic. That's the way the bottom of your truck, the engine bay, the mechanical spaces all look. It's really impressive.
I appreciate that. And honestly, a lot of that was just, I mean, let's all be real. We're a car guys. We know that's not going to last, you know, forever and stuff. But again, if you're going to go through the effort of doing a proper build, especially for me, you know, being on YouTube and then putting it on Cars and Bids, like I want, you know, people can't, unless somebody lives right down the street, they can't see it. They're buying something sight unseen, which is scary for a lot of people, especially when you're talking about decent money. So, you know, I want to present the truck in a way that I would want to see it if I was interested in buying it. It needs to look good. It needs to match. Cosmetically, it needs to match the mods that have been done to it so people can understand, oh, man, he actually really, really went the extra mile. So it gives people confidence that they're buying a quality, you know, build at the end of the day.
That's right.
And I will say this. There are some places in the country where those clean undercarriages last longer than other places. Southern California, Texas, you know, New Mexico, the Southwest.
Right.
Hopefully it's going to one of those places or at least gets garaged.
Going to Illinois.
Okay, we're gonna hope that it's like a summer car only, you know.
Right.
That's in the wars as winters go, Illinois.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. So let's talk a little bit about the auction. Now, a lot of work went into this, a four-year project. Almost everything is custom. You restored it and you modded it. And, you know, it's difficult to let go. So you put it up without a reserve. That was pretty brave. How do you feel about the outcome?
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. I mean, word salad, reset. it was just, there was so many emotions around it because, and you know, in me talking about Cars and Bids, let me just get this out there that I have not been paid by Cars and Bids. This is not a sponsored deal. You know, I have no ties with anybody or anything related to that. So this is just completely objective discussion. But I was debating on Cars and Bids, bring a trailer, you know, they're kind of competitors. Cars and Bids is newer. The reason I went with Cars and Bids to begin with, because I had sold my Monte Carlo build on Bring a Trailer, and that did okay, you know, kind of expected for what the car was. But I know you and I have talked about this, Tim, but just for some, I thought about it a lot, prayed about it a lot, and I was like, I just, something felt right about Cars and Bids. I don't really know how to describe it. It was just a good feeling. I was like, you know, Doug and I make, you know, car reviews and, you know, he's got his following and I've got mine, but I was like, I know I've got, you know, obviously people have to cross between the two channels. And I was like, man, if I put her on this platform, I might get more views and interaction with people that subscribe to us both. And it might be more fun. And it was absolutely the case. Absolutely. Like, there are so many comments on that listing, you know, not just from people who ended up bidding, but just people were like, oh man, I've been subscribed to you for the last 10 years. Like
comments. Yeah.
Right. I've been following this build ever since you first bought it. Like, you know, thanks for, you know, making all this content over the years and stuff. Like, it was so much more than just selling the truck. Like, I had an absolute blast talking to people. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, with 108 comments, there was an awful lot of interaction. Like, this is the great thing about that auction. People asked questions, you had immediate answers. And while there were admirers who were just, you know, I'm here to admire and appreciate, the people who were genuinely bidders were getting information in like real time. Like, this was as close to an auction block with an auctioneer and interaction between the bidders and the seller as possible. Like, this was more social media than an auction.
Yeah. And you know, I will give kudos to Cars and Bids too. Their customer service is legitimately fantastic because, you know, with the Monte Carlo build, there was a lot involved with that as well. You remember that with the tune ports, yeah, injection, all that kind of stuff. And there was, you know, I have this, with all these vehicles I do, I got these massive build sheets and stuff, you know, everything's in excruciating detail. And I remember sending the build sheet, my final review transcript, like, I mean, a huge amount of information about this Monte to Bring a Trailer. And when I saw the listing for approval, I was like, you know, y'all don't want to talk about this or include this. Like, it seems like they're way more limited on what they can write than Cars and Bids. Cars and Bids took this even bigger pile of information and like 400 some odd photos. We had to condense the photos because they have a 300 photo max, but they included probably 98% of the information in one way or another. I mean, they legitimately described the truck as best as they could to really highlight the uniqueness of the build. And I was so impressed. I was like, approve. Thank you for doing that.
And something else that's really important that a lot of folks who've never been on these platforms might not know, but there are two things that people always regret about Bring a Trailer. First, they'll bounce some stuff and that's separate. They just won't post some cars and that's a pain. But the time it takes to get a car live on Bring a Trailer can be an eternity, to the point where you almost miss the season if you try to sell something in late summer. And they are very possessive over descriptions and very controlling over what they'll write and how they'll write it.
Yeah, and it's very, generic's not the right word, but with cars and bids, I mean, both auctions have similar-ish types of descriptions. Cars and bids has a little bit more personal stuff in there, but the biggest thing that was the deciding factor for me was they just about listed the build sheet. Like in how they structure every one of their listings in the different categories, they separated everything as I gave it to them. And so people can legitimately see, just like you were talking about, Tim, you know, you can see the underside of the truck, but they actually listed everything that was there. So there was no question. The only questions that I got were, the type of grade of fuel that I use, if it had functioning AC, which it did. I mean, there were no real questions. Like, it was just, yes, it was just there.
And I'll also say this, it was a good result. Those of you out in cyberspace who are wondering, with the buyer's fee, it came to just under $25,000, which, as far as S10s are concerned, modded or not, restored or not, that's top of the market. That's a very strong result. And, you know, you're not a serial seller on the platform. A lot of times the guys who get big money on these sites are guys who have a history of auctions. So this was basically a first time, a first pass. And it was a great result. But I will say this, like, that was a best case scenario. It worked out really well.
It was. And they actually, and again, going back just to the good feeling of the YouTube camaraderie and all of that stuff, like, they actually used my YouTube channel name in the title of the listing, in Doug's Take. You know, they even in Doug's Take, it said, you know, owned by famed YouTuber Saab Kylo 4. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so nice. Thank you.
No, I did notice that. I thought it was a very gracious thing of him to make it a little bit more personal. And, you know,
that was wonderful. And I thought, you know, there were a lot of people bidding and interacting that had never heard of me before. So I'm sure that gave me a little extra exposure on YouTube, which was super cool. And, but it was that extra personal touch that was just wonderful. I mean, they are the ones that suggested doing the no reserve. I'll be perfectly honest. I didn't want to do it. I was scared to do it. Bring a Trailer was the same way, you know, suggesting no reserve. But again, I trusted that, you know, God had the plan that, you know, it's not what I want. It's what I needed out of the truck to be able to go forward with what I want to do on YouTube and paying for Andy. And
yeah, no, definitely. And I think if I were to just basically look at this and think, like, how could we make this better? There's one thing that I noticed when I went to Bring a Trailer and I typed in RestoMod. And you got to realize there's hundreds of auctions live on Bring a Trailer. They've done probably 100,000 auctions or more. I got 9 returns when I type in RestoMod on previous auctions. I know there have been more than 9 RestoMods on Bring a Trailer. On Cars and Bids, I type in RestoMod. I get 3 results, and none of them are your truck. I feel like we might need like a new platform just for RestoMods.
You know, I thought about that too. You know, I could be completely off my rocker, but it seems like Bring a Trailer, you know, they sell a lot of enthusiast cars too, but they sell a lot of classics and antiques and stuff like that. And, you know, I've even seen them sell engines. But, you know, Cars and Bids brands themselves as like 80s and newer enthusiast cars, which I wouldn't consider an S10 to be necessarily enthusiast cars. They haven't, or enthusiast vehicles, they haven't sold a ton of them. Bring a Trailer sold more, but still not a ton. I think the most expensive one on Bring a Trailer got like 19,000 or something for like a lower mile original one. But in general, it's, again, I'm glad they went as in depth as they did with the description, because it's very hard to convey the value of a quality built RestoMod. I feel. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I really do, because unfortunately, quality is so variable in the aftermarket. Like, when you're getting a factory built product, there's some basic basic hurdles they have to clear: regulatory, product quality, warranty duration. There are going to be road tests, third-party evaluations, long-term tests with magazines and websites. With a resto mod, you could have two very similar-looking vehicles. Like, anyone who wanted to could go out, get a Mako paint job in white, get the visor, get the windshield visor, get the body kit, and the mag wheels. They could make something that looks very much like your truck in a photo online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So being able to, I don't know. It's like if you're looking to spend $20,000+ on an S10, which not many people are unless it's, you know, a Typhoon or a Cyclone or whatever. Typhoon's an SUV. Cyclone. Yeah. If you're looking to spend $20,000+, you know, you wouldn't really think of an S10 to begin with. So when you're scrolling through the listings of, like, if you are just looking to dump money and you're like, oh, what new cars were listed today or what auctions are going on, you'll be scrolling through and it's like, oh, S10, cool. I'm going to go look at this STI. Or a Camaro or something. But if they click on the S10, they'll be like, whoa, look what they did there. So I think unless it is really jumping out at you, it gets drowned out.
There's just a night and day difference whenever mimicking any kind of build is taking play. You could take a vehicle, you could lower it, you could add wheels. You could do the light modifications, but it's going to be a totally different truck from the moment that you open the door to the moment that you close it. It's going to be characteristically a different truck. And
like how do you describe to some, or how do you show somebody that this entire truck has been insulated way beyond any S10 ever, probably in history, and it sounds like a bank vault.
the amount of time that also has been invested in just keeping track of everything that has been done to a build like this, to this S10, is just phenomenal what you've done.
But
that in essence will, you know, that's one way that you can show and you know, just let people know, you know, this is exactly what it takes to get it done right. And, you know.
Yeah, and that can be applied to anything.
And I think the important thing, like, going forward is that I do believe that we need a platform for resto mods. Because if you look at, like, what's popular on Bring a Trailer, it's waitlisted models like, you know, GT3s, AMG Geländewagens, it's modern supercars, and it's immaculately restored or original classics. When I go on there and I search for resto mods, unless I know specifically what I'm looking at, like Gunterwerks or Singer Porsche, you know, the fact that only 9 cars come up in a search of resto mod in the entire history of Bring a Trailer tells me that it's very easy to miss something that is spectacular. And if you don't have that voluminous readout of all the parts, 300 photos, a personal testimonial from the guy who built it and what makes it different, like, look at the two threads of custom cars that came out of the 80s. On the one hand, you had that, like, Chip Foose, Boyd Coddington, super high-end SoCal Speed Shop, like, high luxury hot rod. You had hot rods being built like works of art for guys like Jay Leno and Tim Allen, Billy F. Gibbons, ZZ Top. And by 1997, you had a hot rod class at Pebble Beach. But we also had cars built with new technology, brakes, electronics, climate control, sound system, engine, drivetrain. And that second thread of, like, the new car culture, that was the resto mod. We don't have anything like a routine way of understanding them the way we have now, apparently, a classics category at Concours d'Elegance. You need a platform just for that.
Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, even if you search like a 69 Chevelle, you know, you're going to see a million 69 Chevelles. But if you're looking for something that's been updated with an LS3 and a 6L80 or something like that, you're going to have to manually search all of those unless you see some kind of tagline or something like that. It's you have to do more digging.
Yeah. And I think you do need to have, like, a little bit of selectivity. Like, keep the really bad stuff off the platform so it doesn't give everyone else a bad name. and also have like restomod and, you know, shop literate people who can evaluate these parts lists, make sure they square with reality, and then also, you know, pass judgment on the quality of it. Because at the end of the day, the idea with a restomod is to get a modern level of performance, quality, comfort, reliability in something that still has the spirit of the original. Like if this didn't look like an S10, if it looked like, I don't know, if you could buy a body kit to make it look like a Colorado, I don't think it would still be a restomod. I think it would be something else. I think it'd turn into one of those like Fieros that gets body kitted into a Ferrari.
A Truxtorosa kit.
Yeah, right.
Have you seen that?
No.
It's a body kit that kind of looks like the fairings of a Ferrari Testarossa. Oh,
but you know, the fact that you go on these websites, they don't even have like a tag. They don't even like have like a tag for a restomod. So I think there's a space there, and I think that's an opening. I think we'll revisit this in the future.
What was really cool about the comments, you know, this is not, it doesn't always happen where people comment and, you know, say good things and whatnot, but there were a number of people on this listing that, you know, specifically said like whoever buys this truck is going to get a ridiculous deal because they know how much this stuff costs. They know an LS swap is getting more and more expensive. Yeah, you can do it cheap, but you'll pay for it later. But I mean, there was a lot of money in that S10, more than it sold for. But in keeping, you know, looking at it from a business perspective, you know, I used that truck for, you know, off and on for 4 years to make content. I was blessed to be able to get some sponsors to help out with portions of the build. So it didn't hurt me. It was a plus for me at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it worked out. I'm thrilled. I have no regrets whatsoever.
And, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's maybe a big difference between Cars and Bids and Bring a Trailer. Well, there's a lot of expertise on Bring a Trailer, and that can be really great if you're buying something that's billed as all original or super rare. There's a lot of tearing down on Bring a Trailer. There's some guys who seem to lurk on those common threads just so they can tear things apart. They add nothing positive. They are not pillars of the community. They are basically just hunter killers looking to take their pound of flesh. They're not bidders. They're not helpful guides. I didn't see any of that sniping in the 108 comments for your truck.
None whatsoever. Yeah. And the way what you describe sounds like YouTube sometimes.
I'm a YouTuber myself, you know. I've been there.
Entertaining sometimes, come on.
Oh yeah, it's just not when it's directed towards you. Let me tell you why you're wrong.
Well, everybody's got an opinion, you know, and that's fine. They can have their opinion. They can say what they can say, and you know, you didn't do that, you didn't do this right. But ultimately, you know, as someone that takes the time to actually attend every detail and make it better, and they know that they literally put in their blood, sweat, and tears into the project. You stand back, and snipers can snipe, you know?
And they will, and they always will. Yeah. Unless there are none in the crowd, and maybe that's just the thing that's going on with Cars and Bids.
They hate us because they hate us.
But you know, also, you're a much-loved figure on YouTube. I don't think you give yourself enough credit, but you were Doug DeMuro before Doug DeMuro was doing car videos. And I know back when I was in the Navy, I read articles in Car and Driver about this teenager who was doing car videos on YouTube. And I remember thinking, that guy's pretty cool. Like, that's a good gig. I wish I were doing that. So, you know, I think there's a lot of residual goodwill because they know who you are.
Yeah, it's the only way to be is, you know, good. Be good. Be helpful. Be kind. You know, it'll pay off.
Yeah, truthfully.
Yeah, be a good person.
So we had all of these kind of like secondary ideas for the show. I think this wound up filling the time. And we talked a bit about history. We talked about building the truck. We talked about what set it apart, selling it, Cars and Bids, lessons learned, and things along those lines. So let's just end with, you know, me, you, and Andy, given our opinion on when to restomod and when to leave it alone. So Andy, why don't you start out? When do you restomod a car, and when is it something you have to leave alone?
I'm going to make this short, sweet, and simple. Take the time to observe the vehicle from the undercarriage up.
Okay.
You know, that's the first thing. It doesn't matter what car it is. You know, if you're interested in doing something and restomodding it, make sure that it's going to look really cool when it's done. But first, look at the conditions from the underside. And is it something that you can deal with from the ground up? As anything that is built, the foundation's got to be right. So just take the time to make sure that, and that it hasn't been in any, you know, any large collision in its time, you know, that's actually damaged the alignment of the vehicle, because that, you know, you could easily not see it and then come towards the end of the project, you're dog tracking down the street. So, you know.
That's a really good point. You know, if you're going to resto mod it, you're going to mod it, but you're also going to restore it. It should be restorable.
Make sure you have a good shell. Just make sure you have a good foundation to start with, and that you can find the parts. You know, do some part search before, you know, you even, if you don't already have the vehicle that you're potentially you may work on and resto mod, investigate those parts and see if you can get your hands on them.
Well, it's like if you have some kind of classic vehicle, it doesn't matter what it is, like, what if it's something that you really want to drive and enjoy, but you're worried about parts availability and being able to service it? Is it easier to restomod it? Absolutely. Put some newer kind of powertrain in there, in the old body, just like, you know, we've talked about in prior episodes, and just rock out and not worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Change it if need be. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, for me, that would be like a Dodge Murata. It was like an early 80s Mopar product that everyone's forgotten. There's no exterior trim. There's no interior trim. But that's all stuff you're going to throw out anyway, because they came with 318s best case scenario, and you're going to drop a Hemi in there. So, you know, if you can't get all of the parts to do a proper restoration, and it's going to live or die based on whether you turn it into a resto mod, yeah, give it the stay of execution. Mod that Dodge Murata. And, you know, just forget about getting original factory interior parts and, you know, go full aftermarket.
Speaking of, tell them about your resto mod, Andy.
Yeah, I found something, and it's been in the making, but it's a 1974 Porsche, with a small block in it. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. Hopefully, Lord willing, soon we might have it on the channel.
It's Andy is very modest in his description, but this is it's basically a street legal small block swapped race car with a custom built Porsche transaxle five speed manual,
four
speed, with reverse, and this thing is nasty.
It's fun.
Okay, Andy, you're coming back. We're gonna do updates as this progresses. We're gonna do updates. You know, I think when you do a resto mod, you know, the number one thing to look for is just a straight body and a straight chassis, because a lot of things that are lost causes as preservation or restoration, they're never going to be matching numbers. You're not going to be able to find the parts. Nothing you could do will make this valuable. But you got something that's basically interesting, like a 1970 Challenger that was originally a six-cylinder or a 318. The engine blew a million years ago. There's no transmission in there, but it's not rotted. It's not hit. It's almost like you've got the frame for a painting, and now you're going to fill in all of the colors on the canvas. A straight car that will never be original again, but could have a second life as something other than a parts car. I think that's a resto mod.
And much better in many cases.
I mean,
much better.
I have a 49 Studebaker Commander Starlight Coupe with a big old hole in the block. I mean, I've been collecting parts for it for years. I don't know if I'll actually build it or not, but if I get a chance to, I'm going to do the exact same thing, because you can't find you can find Studebaker parts, but who wants a six-cylinder Studebaker in 2024? And a flathead six Studebaker that can't even get out of its own way. It's not worth anything to begin with, so you might as well have some fun with
might
it.
As well.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, if you can go out there and, you know, assemble the parts to make a Granatelli style like R2 supercharged 289, go for it. It's not original, but it's going to be fun. And you're right. Unless you got like a Studebaker Lark, there are no parts. If you're right. If you're a Lark fan, you got all the parts you want. You're good. But everything else is tough. And I would also say I wouldn't rest a mod if something is so rare or special that it deserves to live. Like take like a 1951 split rear window Volkswagen Bug. In theory, you could chop the top and turn it into like a Hebmuller Cabriolet replica. But are you really going to cut up a genuine split window Bug to make a fake Hebmuller? Like, I don't think so. I don't think you do that.
Guys from the Volkswagen Club, they would come out and have you for it.
Oh my, they would find you. They would hunt you down. In the edge of the internet, you have nowhere to hide.
Oh, gracious, yes. I actually, if people want to go on my channel and look up, I think it was a 71 or 72, but I had a hand in helping build a custom wide body Beetle Roadster. This was a Super Beetle originally. You know, they're not as valuable as those vintage ones, but it had a custom fiberglass wide body kit. It was a convertible originally. All of the convertible stuff was cut out. It was a permanent roadster. It was basically a bathtub, slammed to the ground, disc brakes all the way around. It was a nasty little car. Nice. The windshield was chopped and everything. And I remember, you know, the review is really cool. But I remember some comments be like, oh my gosh, why did you guys do that? That's a mess, because they take millions of them and it's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. Can you imagine having fun with a car? How dare you?
It's like my take on all of this restomodding and restoring is life is short. Have fun. Don't get so pent up out of shape and stuff if something's not like, I mean, there's a crowd out there, the purists and the Concours and all that kind of stuff. I want nothing to do with all that stuff because it's too like wound up. You know what I mean? It's like, just have fun. Oh,
I know exactly what you mean. I was at Amelia Island 2 years ago. There was a guy with a dry paintbrush brushing leaf clippings off a wheel for a car. I'm like, come on, man. It's a golf course. Of course this grass. Deal with it. Get it. But, you know, that's the name of the game for those guys. That, you know, let them have their fun. We'll have ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Kyle, where can people find you on the internet? Where can they find us?
Saab Kyle 04 LLC on Facebook, Instagram, just Saab Kyle 04 on YouTube. Andy is currently working on his social media presence. I will help him with that.
Tap into his channel. Find me there.
And for mostly watch stuff, but a little bit of course, I am Tim_Masso on Instagram. Guys, thanks for driving and diving with us.
Take care.
Have a great day.